Chapter 21. Home. In Kofi's dreams, she visited the Mistwood. The acacia trees always appeared first, rising from the mist itself, like so many spindly men with crooks in their backs, their ash-gray bark cast to silver in the moonlight. Their thorns, long as a finger, did not touch her as she moved among them, and no sound came from her feet as she padded across the wood's dirt. When she inhaled, the scent of pinewood sap filled her lungs. When she exhaled, the voices came to her. Help us. Like a chorus, they sang the words in a whine, in a growl. Only two words, but they were touched with a hungered quality, a desperation. Help us. Who are you? Kofi asked the trees, but they did not answer as their trunks swayed in the quiet breeze. She closed her eyes and reached for the splendor resting in her body, pulled it to the surface until it thrummed through her core, and those familiar speckles of golden light appeared in the air around her, twinkling, waiting. She turned slowly, taking in all that was the Mistwood. She had to be at the heart of it, though she had no recollection of deciding to come here. Such was the nature of dreams. Her muscles coiled and tensed as she waited for the voice, the voices, to call out again. But when her gaze panned the trees a second time, she caught a glimpse of a face instead, the face of a little girl. The thick black braids on her head were unraveling at their ends, and her torn clothes hung loose off her bony frame as she cautiously approached Kofi with one hand in her mouth. She tilted her head with uncertainty, and instinct prompted Kofi to lower to her knees so that she was level with the little girl. Are you all right? She tried to speak softly, but in the Mistwood's perpetual quiet, her voice reverberated like the pluck of a chorus string. The girl stopped walking, flinched.
I want to go home.
Her voice, in contrast to Kofi's, was paper thin, a mere whisper nearly lost in the wind. Kofi watched as tears filled her eyes, replaying the little girl's words in her own mind. Home. I want to go home. It's all right. Kofi extended her arms, and the girl took a few steps forward. It's all right. I won't hurt you. The girl considered a moment. There was a wariness in her eyes that didn't look right in a body so small. Kofi wondered at that. The girl stood perfectly still for 1 second, 2 seconds, 3. Then she seemed to come to a decision. In careful steps, she closed the gap between the two of them until she was standing within arm's reach of Kofi.
I want to go home.
It's all right, Kofi repeated. We'll get you home. She looked around again, then stood. The speckles of splendor were still floating around her, throwing fracturing golden light against the trees. I know what to do, Kofi thought. This is something I can help with. I have a special gift, she told the little girl, and I can use it to get us out of this place, okay? The girl nodded, and when Kofi reached out again, she offered her free hand. It was cold to the touch as Kofi took it in her own, like a dress that had been left out on the laundry lines overnight, but Kofi only squeezed it. The Mistwood was a scary place. Who knew how long this little girl had been lost here? She called to the splendor, and it came back to her, hovering around her arms and legs and face, still waiting. Show us the way out of here, she asked it, the way home. Without hesitation, the splendor began to move. Like golden pearls strung along an invisible necklace, they formed a line, one that seemed to stretch on forever. She looked down again and found that the little girl's eyes had gone wide, though the emotion behind them was still difficult to discern. That light will lead us home, said Kofi. We just have to follow it, okay? This time, the girl didn't answer. She seemed transfixed by the splendor now, watching the speckles of light with a kind of awe. Slowly, she took her fingers out of her mouth and made to touch them, but they danced out of her reach. She frowned.
I want to go home.
Come on, said Kofi, giving her other hand a gentle tug. Let's go. The Mistwood held its quiet as they walked. One step after another, Kofi followed the golden light. With each stride, she felt a growing sense of relief, of confidence. This was her gift as a Duraja, her affinity. It was an unusual one, but useful. After all of this time, after all of this practice, she'd mastered it. We're going home. There was power in those words. Kofi felt the strength of them down in the soles of her feet. Home. She could see it now. The streets of Lycosa as they unwound themselves before her. Its sounds, its smells, its people. She'd been robbed of the chance to truly get to know Lycosa. She'd been locked away at the night zoo for so long. But when she finally returned, when she got home, everything would be different. She would find Mama and Jabir, and they would sew together a life from the scraps they'd been given. It wouldn't be grand, but it would be beautiful. It would be theirs. Home. The lights of the splendor were twinkling now. Up ahead, Kofi saw that they were leading toward an opening in the trees, a paler light. She saw the first hints of stars in an inky sky, a low-hanging moon. Kofi quickened her steps. Come on, she said, pulling at the little girl. You see that light up there? We're almost out of the Mistwood. We're almost home. She was surprised to feel a sharp tug on her arm. When she turned, the girl had stopped walking. Her eyes were wider now. Her lips trembled.
I want to go home.
Kofi tempered the slightest touch of irritation. We are going home, she said gently. See? Right there up ahead? That's home. The girl shook her head.
No, I want to go home.
They were close, so close. Kofi took a deep breath, lowering so that again she was on her knees before the girl. She tried a different tactic.
Where is home for you?
The little girl tilted her head as though confused, and Kofi sighed. Perhaps this child didn't really know where her home was. You understand me, which means you speak Zamani, she said. Are you from the Zamani region? The little girl did not answer. Instead, she reached out and touched Kofi's cheek, her hair.
Home, she whispered. I want to go home.
We are. Kofi now had to make an effort to keep the frustration from her own voice. We're going home. It's just up there. She looked over her shoulder and pointed again to that light. It's just a few more. The words turned to ash on her tongue as she turned back around and looked at the little girl. She'd changed in 100 tiny ways. No longer was her skin brown like Kofi's. It was gray, flaked in places. Her unraveling braids were no longer thick, but stringy and thin, white. Worst of all, where the girl's brown eyes had been, there were only two fathomless black holes. Kofi shuddered, tried to pull her arm away. Let go of me.
I want to go home.
When the little girl spoke, her voice was no longer singular and fragile. It was that same chorus, cold and demanding. Take us home. Who are you? Kofi felt the start of a new terror begin to nibble at her edges, its teeth tiny and sharp as it grew hungrier. Chills broke out over her skin. She was cold, too cold, and the little girl was not relinquishing her grip. Pain lanced through her arm as that grip tightened, as the muscles and joints in her shoulder protested. There was a hunger carved into the girl's face, into the lines around her gaping mouth.
She has two eyes.
The voices came from the girl's mouth, but Kofi heard them all around her, echoing among the trees.
But she does not need both. She could give us one. All we need is one, for the payment, and then we can go home. We want to go home.
No, Kofi yanked her arm from the little girl's hands, ignoring the snap of pain she felt in doing so. She stood and backed away quickly, doing her best not to trip on the acacia tree's roots. Their long white thorns scratched at her bare skin now. Warm blood trickled down her arms, her legs. She glanced over her shoulder yet again. To her dismay, the light up ahead was getting dimmer. The speckles of splendor were fading. But if she could get to them, if she could run. She started toward that opening in the trees as fast as she could. It was still several yards away, but if she could get close enough, if she could make it. Her body lurched as an ice-cold hand caught hold of her ankle, sending her crashing toward the ground. Her mouth filled with the taste of earth, grit crunched between her teeth. She tried to rise to her elbows, to get back to her feet, but something still held her. When she turned, the little girl was still there, lying on her belly as she held onto Kofi with both hands. She grinned. "Let go of me!" Kofi tried and failed to keep the fear from her voice. "Let go! Let go of me!" But the girl did not acknowledge her, and when Kofi's gaze lifted, she saw that they were no longer alone. Others moved between the trees now, emaciated people with skin the color of sludge and cavernous holes in the places where eyes belonged. Their toothless mouths pulled into slackened smiles, their fingers bent like claws, primed to tear into flesh. "No!" Kofi screamed and thrashed, but it was no use. The thorns were growing longer. The faces of the untethered seemed to surround her on all sides. They would... "Kofi?" Kofi opened her eyes with a start. It took her several seconds to recalibrate, to get a sense of her bearings. She was, she realized, no longer in the Mistwood. She was in Zane's study. Understanding came back to her slowly. She was sitting in Zane's armchair, and he was kneeling before her, hands hovering just above the backs of hers. She met his gaze. "How did I do?"
"You did better," he said.
"That was about a minute longer than before." A minute, only a minute. Kofi slumped in her chair, frowning.
"That's good, Butterknife," said Zane, rising. He moved to sit on the edge of the desk. "You're getting better, little by little, every time you try."
Kofi said nothing, but tried to temper her annoyance. She was still training with the Dirages of Thornkeep during the day, but her nights had taken on new purpose. If she was going to lead everyone through the Mistwood, she needed some way to practice, to get used to being there. It had been Zane who'd agreed to help her simulate it in preparation.
"We're running out of time."
Kofi closed her eyes and massaged her temples.
"I have to get this right. I can't keep freezing up and panicking every time I see the untethered."
Doing it in dreams was one thing, but she didn't want to think about what would happen if she did it in real life, when everyone was following her, counting on her. These people were putting their lives in her hands. Every time Kofi truly thought about that, her stomach twisted.
"Why don't we try something else, like working with the splendor?"
Zane's gaze lifted to the study's vaulted ceiling.
"We don't have much space in here, but we can try some exercises."
Kofi sighed.
"Okay."
"Right," Zane looked around. "I want you to pick out three things in this room. Any three things." Kofi's eyes settled on the goblet on the desk, a bright red-spined book on the shelf, and a green apple Zane had been holding earlier. She told him the three she'd picked. "Now," Zane continued, "close your eyes and count to 10. I'm going to hide those three things in different parts of the room. When you get to 10, I want you to call the splendor. Think about those three items, finding them, and see if the splendor will show you where they are." Kofi pursed her lips.
"So, hide and seek?"
"Essentially, yes." She stared at him, but when one of his brows quirked, she shrugged.
"Fine.
Close your eyes and start counting," he said with a smirk.
"As you do, try to think about your three items.
Think about them with as much detail as you can." Kofi obeyed, closing her eyes and taking deep breaths in and out.
Behind her eyelids, there was nothing but blackness, but she tried to do what Zane said. 1, 2, 3. She pictured the goblet first. It was small, copper, with gold around its brim. 4, 5, 6. She thought of the book on the shelf, its spine red as blood. There'd been fancy white letters on it, but she hadn't been close enough to discern what they said. 7, 8, 9. She pictured the apple last, light green, small, slightly dented on one side. 10. Kofi opened her eyes. Zane was standing in the middle of the study, looking triumphant. "Good luck," he said. "You'll need it." There was a taunting in his voice, but it didn't reach his eyes. Kofi closed her eyes again, and this time she tried to focus. Najiri had been teaching her breathing exercises, and now she practiced holding breaths in both her chest and her diaphragm. With each exhale, she felt herself becoming more centered, more aware of her body's intricacies, the way everything worked together like a carefully crafted machine. When she called the splendor to her now, she didn't ask, she commanded. "Come to me." In a rush, the energy coursed through her, hot on her bones and against her skin. She imagined it leaving her, forming tiny dots of light in the space around her. Once again, she pictured the copper goblet. "Find it," she ordered. "Show me where it is." She opened her eyes and watched as the speckles of light wound and twirled in the air like leaves picked up by a breeze. Slowly, they reoriented themselves to form a loose sort of line leading from her to a spot on the bookshelf's top shelf. She followed it, dragging a footstool so that she could reach it. It had been some time since the books on this shelf had been touched, a thin layer of dust covering each one. There was no evidence at all that Zane had moved them, but the speckles of light floated to a space behind them. Carefully, Kofi slid 2 or 3 of them forward, grasping at the air. Her fingers closed around a cool metal stem, and when she withdrew the goblet, she felt a thrill. She glanced over her shoulder and grinned at Zane. "Nice," he conceded. "Now, the book." Kofi carefully stepped down from the stool and placed the goblet on the desk. Once again, she closed her eyes and tried to picture what she wanted the splendor to see, too. The pages of the old book, the crease in its leathery binding. "Find it," she commanded. "Help me find it." The speckles that had hovered by the goblet rose in the air, twinkling like tiny stars a moment, before moving to create a new line. This time, it led to the desk. She felt Zane's eyes on her as she walked around it once, twice, and then to one of its drawers. Kofi tugged it open and felt another surge of excitement as her eyes landed on the little red book. She held it up, victorious. Zane opened his mouth to speak, but she held her hand up. She knew what he was going to say. The apple. Where was the apple? Her eyes roamed the room. In truth, there were few hiding places left. A small throb had started at the base of her head, and she felt the smallest bit of dread as it grew more intense. That throb was her body's first signal, a warning that she was approaching her limits. She gritted her teeth. No. She wasn't sure who she was talking to, her body or herself. No, not now. I'm finding that apple. With a low groan, she pushed past the pain and tried to quiet her mind again. The splendor was still in the air, still waiting for her to address it. She closed her eyes and raised her hands. The apple. She didn't speak the words, but they sounded thunderous in her mind. Show me where the apple is. Lead me to it. There was a long, terrible moment in which the splendor began to flicker out, in which she wasn't sure if it had hurt her at all. She wondered if it might be abandoning her. Perhaps it sensed her fatigue. She raised her hands slightly higher. Show me, she commanded. Now. Without warning, a new blaze of energy erupted somewhere in her ribs, hotter than she'd ever felt before. It was like swallowing a coal. A pressure built in her throat, behind her eyes, in her pores. She heard a small pop, and then the world seemed to mute itself. In its place, a dull roar filled the air. The golden speckles of light were growing now, trembling as they moved to form a line for the third time. She watched as they bobbed in the air, lowering until they led her straight to Zane. He hadn't moved from his spot in the middle of the study, and now his eyes were wide as they locked on Kofi. Kofi felt like it took ages to reach him, to close the small space between them. This time, she was the one who smirked as she pulled the apple from his pocket and held it up. As though it understood its job was done, the splendor began to fade.
"And that's three items," Kofi beamed. "I've got to say, that felt pretty..."
She stopped as she watched Zane's expression change. He looked bewildered.
"What?"
"Kofi, you looked..." He seemed at a loss for words. "You looked really different when you did that." Kofi frowned.
"Different?"
"Your whole body was glowing," he said quietly. "Even your eyes." The words caught Kofi off guard. She'd pushed herself, yes, felt that last vestige of the energy come to her when called, but she hadn't felt so different from usual. The way Zane was looking at her made her feel odd. There was awe and appreciation in his gaze, but there was also something that looked uncomfortably like fear. She watched the corner of his mouth pull down, saw the slight pinch between his brows. "Kofi, I know that you're feeling a lot of pressure right now, more pressure than anyone else at Thornkeep," he said carefully. "But you have to remember that you're still holding the splendor you took from Adia within you. That much energy makes you powerful, but..." He hesitated. "Don't let it consume you, okay?" Kofi wasn't immediately sure what to say. There was real concern in Zane's eyes, a concern she herself had never seen before. After a moment, she nodded. "I'll be careful," she said. "I promise." With her free hand, she took Zane's and squeezed. He jumped at her touch, but didn't look unhappy about it. His eyes softened, and every muscle in his body seemed to relax. "I think you've more than proven yourself for one night," he said kindly. "Come on, I'll walk you back to your room." Kofi let him take her from the study without a word. She was grateful when its candles extinguished, letting them both fall into new darkness, a darkness in which she didn't have to admit what she'd just felt when she'd called the splendor to her. A hunger. Kofi spent most of the next day with McKenna, and when dusk fell, they made their way to the den where Najiri, Amon, and Zane were waiting. From the moment she entered it, she could feel a palpable excitement crackling in the air. Zane and Amon were sitting in chairs, but Najiri was on the floor sitting cross-legged before a large piece of parchment. At first, Kofi didn't understand what she was looking at, but when she moved to stand over Najiri's shoulder, she recognized it. It was a crude map of Thornkeep's grounds. "We've come up with a plan," said Najiri, using her palms to smooth out the sketch. "I've talked with the last of the Dirajas I trust, and it looks like we have 18 coming with us. That's just shy of 10% of Thornkeep's Dirajas." Kofi tempered the knot in her stomach. 18 wasn't a huge number, but it felt big to her. "The plan itself is simple," Najiri went on. "We'll go through a normal day, and that night, eat dinner." Her eyes flashed. "Or at least we'll pretend to." At Kofi's confused gaze, she lowered her voice and went on. "Izem is going to be adding a special ingredient to everyone's food and drink, a concoction of lavender. It won't harm anyone, but it will make everyone sleep very deeply. No one will hear or notice us leaving. I'm going to gather all of the girls from their quarters. Amon will gather the boys. We're split pretty evenly. Meanwhile, McKenna and Zane will escort you to the North Garden. We'll meet up there and then we'll go," Kofi finished, "into the Mistwood." McKenna nodded.
We don't know how thick the mistwood actually is, so we'll need to pack. We can't travel heavy. Fedu will notice too much food stored up. But if we start rationing small amounts of non-perishables now...
Kofi let Najiri's words fade as she went over the rest of their plan's logistics. After some back and forth, it was decided that they would leave in 4 days. That gave them enough time to prepare, but not so much time for anyone to get cold feet and alert Fedu. Kofi said nothing, as one by one, the Darajas left the den. She even waved McKenna off. Eventually, only she and Zane were left in the room.
Are you okay?
He was still sitting in his chair, watching her intently.
Yeah.
The lie came easier than Kofi cared to admit to herself, but that didn't stop her from saying it.
Just nervous, I guess.
You're going to be fine, he said. You've practiced almost every day.
We've been doing the simulations.
Simulations aren't the same as the real thing, though, she said, shaking her head. She knew as soon as she said the words that they were the ones that had been sitting in the back of her mind, gnawing at her.
Zane, no matter what, I'm not going to feel ready to do this unless I know that I can be in the Mistwood for a long amount of time without falling apart.
She paused.
Which is why I need to ask you for a favor.
At once, Zane pursed his lips.
Why do I have a feeling I'm not going to like what you're going to say?
Because you're probably not, Kofi admitted. But I have to ask.
Zane pinched the bridge of his nose.
Go on.
Kofi braced herself, then spoke.
I want to go back to the Mistwood. Tonight.